Hey, what's up, Trainiacs? Triathlon Taren here, flying solo again. We actually recorded this interview with Sarah True, two-time Olympian, while at Ironman Austin 70.3 2017. It was the day before the race. Sarah carved out about 20 minutes of her time, and I took about 30 from her, and we had a fantastic interview. I'm a really big fan of Sarah now. It's the first time I've ever met her. And to be perfectly honest, I reached out to a bunch of pros that I knew were going to be here and thought that it would be interesting to interview. And Sarah was the only one that said, yeah, for sure. Let's definitely do a podcast. And that was the attitude that she seems to have all the time. She was so fun, so giggly, so honest with her time, both good and bad, as an Olympian racing the ITU circuit. She shared with us some of the good things about moving to the half Ironman distance and how it's given her a new lease on her triathlon life. And she also shares some of the darker things about what it's like being a professional athlete, and specifically a government-funded professional athlete on the Olympic track. And she also talks about some of the darkest times that she's had battling injuries, and what it's like where triathlon and being a triathlete is not just your persona, but it's literally, it's everything about who you are and what your family does. And thank you very much, Sarah, for taking the time and being so open and honest and awesome. Side note, the day after we recorded this interview, Sarah went on to win Half Ironman Austin 70.3, at which point I yelled to her as she was running into the finish line, "Fifth gear, Sarah, come on!" Which will make sense after you listen to this interview. So I believe that I should take, I don't know, 30% of the credit for her winning. Anyway, Trainiacs, here's the interview with Sarah True. I hope you enjoy it. So ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Sarah True. We'll paint the picture as the day before Half Ironman Austin.
Hello, hello. We're here.
Yeah.
It's real.
Yeah. How many races has this been for you this year? You're on half a dozen now?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess this is my sixth for the year.
And you've had some awesome first showings at the half distance.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been a fun transition. You know, coming from the Olympic format racing, I wasn't sure if I'd like it. I did kind of a teaser race in May in Chattanooga, and about 3 weeks later, I said, that's it. I'm done with ITU. It's time to move on to half Ironman, and haven't looked back.
Really?
Yeah, that's it.
What was it about the distance that you liked?
I think it's actually a few things. You know, I've been doing the ITU stuff for so long that it didn't excite me in the same way it used to. You know, it was so Olympics focused. I'm not going for another game. So there was no longer that carrot kind of dangling in front of me. But there's also something really invigorating about doing the, you know, the WTC races, because, you know, with ITU, you're basically in this bubble. You know, you'd see the same people, you're racing the same people all around the world. There's very, very little amateur athlete interaction. Whereas I come to these events, the WTC events, and we're all doing the same event. We're all doing the same. We're all doing the same distance. It's just kind of bringing it back to my roots. And I love that. Like, I love the fact that, you know, I get to hang out with people that, you know, do the sport, but they also have three kids and a full-time job, or, you know, people who are retired and this is what they do for fun. I think that's awesome. It reminded me how much I love the sport.
How's it different racing for yourself basically now versus racing for your country back when on the ITU circuit?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely, it's two things. So it's, yeah, I'm racing because we're gonna hang out for a second, wait for the announcement to end.
Yeah, 3 o'clock briefing. There's a lot of disappointed people here. Like, I thought I was here for a 3 o'clock briefing.
Yeah. Come on. Okay. Anyway, continuing. Yeah. So obviously, doing the ITU stuff, doing the Olympics, you are a representative of your country. And, you know, that comes with it both a lot of honor and a lot of responsibility. But it's kind of freeing in some ways to be a free agent. You know, I get to choose my races. I get to...
You don't get to choose your races in ITU?
Well, it's limited because you're doing a circuit. So you're doing a series and you want to maximize the number of points because that's how you figure out whether or not you're going to be a world medalist. You know, like, you have to follow the calendar. And there are only so many of the World Triathlon Series races. So basically, we're following those races. You might not do a few of them, but if you want to be eligible at the end of the year, you have to do like five plus the finale, and it's all a points game. Yeah. Yeah. So with this, you know, there are so many Ironman races that I'm free to choose what I want, how it fits into my schedule. I can race a lot more in North America. I'm doing it simply because I love it. And that's pretty awesome.
Have you found it to be like, almost like a new lease on the career?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think back this spring, I was very close to retiring and just, you know, saying that was it. That was the end of my career. I did the race in Chattanooga a few weeks later. I said, this is what I have to do. And that was it.
And then, so you did that. And then I had this written down, but being the genius I am, didn't bring that piece of paper. So you had nothing but fourth place or better finishes all year, right?
Yeah. So I other than Worlds, I've been on the podium for all of my half races so far.
And Worlds was a tough day. Holy shitballs.
I'll take being the first spot right off the podium. You know, somebody's got to fill that role.
Yeah. So you're now also coaching yourself, right?
I have a coach.
You have a coach?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you flip back and forth? At one point you were coaching yourself?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So basically, long story short, I asked Matthew Rose to take care of my swim program. He also coaches Haley Chura. And just our relationship has evolved. And back in June, I said, you know, let's do this. Let's qualify for Worlds for 70.3. I'm all in. If you want to help me out with the bike and the run, that would be awesome because I don't know what I'm doing.
Really? You don't know what you're doing with the run.
Well,
the ITU races are so run focused. Like that should be your bread and butter. Like you get off the bike and you're like, all right, I'm gonna mess you girls up.
It's a different run. So for this, it's a strength run. It's not a speed run in the same way that ITU is.
Okay.
Yeah. So the training ends up being a little different.
And, something that you just said at the pro panel is that you've got golden retriever syndrome on the bike.
Absolutely. I look around, like looking at all the pretty trees and stuff. I mean, with ITU, it's just so engaging on the bike because you have to pay attention or you're going to crash. Let's be honest. You're in a pack. They're tight turns. It's really dynamic. I've had to start to try to train my brain to shift away from that. And I have a hard time focusing. I give so much credit to the people who can do 5-hour trainer sessions looking at their top tube, you know, hammering out.
Like Lionel? I don't know how he does that every day. I am Lionel Sanders'
polar opposite.
The exact opposite, yeah.
Polar opposite. Because I will go outside if it's, you know, 35 degrees and raining because I cannot handle being on the trainer.
So how are you dealing with the long rides? You got to be doing two and a half... just steady hour rides day in, day out.
My rides. So we kind of trick me. I think my coach is trying to trick me because, I'll do like longer climbs because then you're going somewhere. You're producing the watts, but you're going up hills. And I think he's figured out I need a lot of, dynamic kind of sessions. So I do very little of, you know, long intervals where I have to pay attention. It's more broken up into 10, 15 minutes. Cause that's about, I start looking around about 5 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. Like, Sarah, I can focus 10 more minutes. Come on.
Really? Is it getting easier?
It's getting a little easier. Yeah. I still have a ways, but yeah, it's starting to get easier.
What about nutrition? Has that been a change? Because I've had buddies that did like just even age group sprints in Olympics, and before a race, they'll be like,
squirting out a bottle because they're like, ah, don't need that extra half pound.
Yeah.
But now you're on a moving buffet.
So I'll put it this way. My first race this year in Chattanooga in May, I was really proud of myself because I went through three bottles, I think, of water, and I had a 200, 300 calories total.
In the race.
In the race.
The entire race.
The entire race.
And you burned 4,000. I think
300 calories. But normally, you know, IT race, I'd have like 100 because I just...
Right,
because
you all take, like, I see that coming like 10 minutes out from T2, you're all kind of taking one gel.
Yep.
And that's the extent of it.
And that's the extent for me. So it's been a learning process. I have to remind myself... But, you know, it's hard to remember to eat, but I've gotten it dialed in. I have, you know, I'll take like three gels on the run and, you know, I have my nutrition plan on the bike. I just have to try to remember it because I've gotten done with races being like, oh, shoot, I was supposed to drink a lot more and I didn't. Or
did you notice that during the race?
You know what? I think like a lot of people who make these mistakes, you notice it on the run and after the race. So you're like, oh, I'm a little thirsty, no big deal, on the bike. But then it catches up with you, you know, or just how you recover. I found it's a lot faster to recover when you eat more.
So you're just going on empty the whole time. And what are your run splits in a half? Let's give people some context of just how fast you're running on empty.
I think like 121 off the bike. Yeah. Yeah.
And doing it on empty. And how does it feel when you start like getting to that edge where you're like, oh man, maybe I should have had more than 300 calories.
Well, the first sign is, I'm a little hungry. When you're legitimately a little hungry, that's probably a bad sign. And then you just kind of get a little fuzzy. Like your brain starts needing the calories that you don't have. Yeah. It's not advisable. Not do what I do. Do not
do it. Yeah, nobody ever go and finish on podiums in half Ironmans.
This is the anti-pro tip.
Yeah.
Like, actually take nutrition. That's
what's the internal
advisable
chatter that you go through when that happens?
Dumb head. Like, come on, Sarah.
You can swear on this.
Okay. Oh, phew.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I started this. I don't swear on YouTube, but on this, sure, shit,
okay.
I do. Yeah.
Oh, ooh, getting a little spicy here.
I know, yeah. There's nobody around to listen. There's no kids.
Well, yeah, until I get, you know, the email from some parent that's like, Sarah, I listened to the interview with my child, and you're supposed to be, you know,
you're a
model.
You're a role model for all of us.
Yeah, no. I'm going to continue to watch my language before it gets a little salty.
I'm going to edit in swears.
Oh, my.
Female swears.
Yeah. Make them creative, at least.
Yeah. So where were we? Internal chatter.
Okay.
How? Yeah, what is that? What's that like for... Is it different for a pro?
No. No. I think, you know, one of... It's so easy to put pros up on some pedestal, like, we were just humans and we're make dumb mistakes and, you know, we have the same insecurities as everybody else.
Okay. And what's a paragraph in your head when you realize I'm hungry and things are not going to go well?
Oh, geez. Basically, you just start beating myself up. I'm like, I'm a total idiot, you know? Like, come on, this is not your first rodeo. Because we're in Texas, so clearly I have to use rodeo.
Yeah, you've got the camouflage hat on here.
Camo doesn't go in rodeos, but how many have you been to?
I'm from Canada.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't know what I'm talking about here. No, I've heard of them in books.
Yeah. No camo and rodeos. Come on, man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you start beating yourself up about being an idiot and being inexperienced and, you know, why do you continue to make dumb mistakes? And, you know, it's a very healthy rabbit hole to start falling down.
Anything you do to pull yourself out of that in particular?
Finish the race.
Really? Just keep going?
Well, I mean, there's no there's no choice at that point. Like, you know, I guess if you have the food with you, you try to remember to take it. Water, once you're dehydrated, it's really hard to reverse that. You know, it's just trying to remember for next time.
All right. That's fair. Just finish.
Just finish.
Yeah, learn some lessons.
Just learn some lessons. But, you know, some of us, we kind of have the head beating against the wall syndrome. Where we're like, we've learned the same lessons over and over again.
And you're still taking 300 calories. You're like, race plan, 1,100 calories.
I have learned from that one. I've done much better with calories. Still have some lessons on water, but that's a different story.
That would probably be so foreign coming from ITU because, like, you can't even, like, it'd be hard to even take your hands off the bars.
Okay, I'm going to use this opportunity to complain for a second.
Please do.
Okay, so coming from ITU, we get real water bottles on the run. Like, you can hold it and drink out of it. You
like
get
an actual squirty water bottle?
Like, no, like a little plastic bottle.
Oh, okay.
You know, but you can get a good few mouthfuls out of it.
Like, oh yeah, because and then you even have
paper cups
that you got to squish.
Drive me insane. Where you grab it, maybe there's a mouthful of water in there. Most of it goes everywhere. Like, they're so useless. It drives me absolutely nuts. Like, for Ironman to change, 100%. No more lame paper cups.
No more lame paper cups. Water bottles, hey.
Yes.
Andrew Messick, email coming at you right away.
I'll send him this podcast. Yeah, please do.
He will like this.
I hate those paper cups. They drive me nuts.
You've been, over the course of your career, you've had a couple of, I don't know, setbacks or like bumps in the road. Lots and lots of like podium finishes where you were, how many years was it until you had your first win?
Yeah.
Like
many.
Yeah, many. You had the 1 year, and was it 2010 that you had a crack sternum?
Sacrum. Yeah, so pelvis.
That was close. Oh.
Yeah, very different part of the body.
Oh, yeah, very much. And then in 2012, finishing just off the podium in Rio, which as I was reviewing it, I was like, oh, geez, that's like awesome performance. And then I realized, oh, that actually might be demotivating. I'll preface all this with like right now.
Are you just trying to beat me down right now? Make me feel bad?
I'm trying to give you some anger for tomorrow. Yeah. Now I'm going to try to bring it back around really classy, self-deprecating. Yep. So over the last couple of months, I've found that sort of like my career now is based off of doing triathlons. Mm-hmm. People watching and listening every day. And I've got a little bit of Achilles issues and like it makes me scared. That like, what if I can't do triathlon every day? Like your entire persona, like who you are for how many decades now as being a triathlete and like me, I could go and do like social media consulting on the side, but like you've got decades wrapped up into being a triathlete and being a top level triathlete. Two-part question, which was like the biggest setback that you went throughout all that? Which one do you look at as like, ooh, that was a really hard time? And how did you get through it?
100% Rio last year. I mean, it's on so many levels. This podcast is not going to be long enough. I think what got me out of
have
it.
Have you ever gone and watched that tape? Or have you?
I never will. Because it's on so many levels. I mean, you touched upon it, but it's obviously there's the professional side, but it's deeply personal. You know, it was so many people had to rally behind me after a really hard year leading into it. And when like my body failed me during race, it was like I let all of them down. And
what happened for anyone that doesn't know?
So my leg cramped up. That was it. Like it seized up, had to stop. And
right in the middle of the bike, right?
Right in the middle of the bike. You know, my husband's a runner. You know, he nearly made the Olympic team, but didn't. You know, for 4 years, I'd been wanting a chance to fight for a medal again. And then all of a sudden, and to have him by my side, you know, as a fellow Olympian, all of a sudden, like, everything starts crushing, you know, falling down on you, where it's our entire worlds. You know, it's more than our professional lives. It's more than self-identity. It's you start to realize how precarious everything is when every decision you make is for one goal. And then how do you rebuild yourself after that? And it took me a year, and it took me moving to 70.3 to start to rebuild again. Like, I am only now, like in the past month, starting to be who I was a few years ago. I mean, this is a multi-year thing. Like, I don't think people understand. Like, we see high performance sport very superficially, and when you get a peek behind the curtain, there's a lot of ugliness behind it. But I'm, you know, what's cool is I'm starting to see the beautiful side of sport again, like seeing my place in it. So it's this podcast is getting deep, yo.
Yeah.
You were not expecting that answer.
Actually, I kind of was.
Oh, okay. Oh, shoot. I need some curveball here.
It's like, what are the lessons that you now take into the half distance or like even just training, triathlon, life in general now?
Just to be appreciative of it all, to surround myself with good people. I mean, I think that's the toxic part of sport that people don't always see, is that there are some, you know, not great people involved. Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Well, I guess there'd be a lot of people that are like, their success is completely dependent on your success, but they also don't have to pay the price of any failures that you have. Like, they could,
yeah,
I mean, so conceivably, as a coach, not to say my coach or your coach or any coach, but like, they don't have to pay the price of an injury if you're overtrained.
Yeah. With I think people have to realize the whole structure of sport basically makes, at a high level, makes athletes expendable. And there's a lot of money to be made on the backs of athletes, which I know that I'm sound super cynical right now, but
no,
like,
I think people need to hear this.
The whole Olympics, you know, you walk away. Most people are just really jaded by the whole thing, 'cause you realize a lot of it's a money making operation. I know it's so depressing, but it's also the most amazing thing of all time. Like, I am so unbelievably proud to be an Olympian, but I also realize that there is this other side to it. Yeah.
And I guess it would be refreshing, because it's racing for you.
Yeah.
It's racing when you want.
And let's be honest, there are people making tons of money off of us, but it's still fun. Like, it's fun now.
Okay, so let's bring it around.
I know this has gotten so negative. Let's be positive again, because I do love this sport. I really do.
I picked at that scab, and I shouldn't have. Damn it.
Let's just edit that one
out. You didn't want to go there, and you did. So let's say, like, looking forward, you got your mojo back.
Yeah.
You hinted at Kona, mm-hmm. showing off some shoes on Instagram.
Yep.
You just talked about an hour ago.
Yep.
Yeah. Talk about that.
It's about a few weeks ago. It was, you know, let's say it's pre-Kona, because everybody gets the Kona bug, right?
Yeah.
Around Kona, but then, like, in March, how
Mel's
do you feel?
Fiance got the Kona bug, and he hasn't run to the bus in his life.
Yeah, I don't think it really sunk in until, and I'm still processing the whole thing, but I just assumed I would have to do multiple Ironman races in order to qualify. But
to get enough points?
Yeah. So for pros, you know,
you gotta do what? Like four? Make them be a good four?
It doesn't even have to be four. You just need to have enough points. But a fourth place finish at Chattanooga for 70.3 Worlds put me in a good position points wise, really good position points wise. And that never was a goal and never occurred to me. But we think if I have one Ironman that I finish and do relatively well, it doesn't have, I don't have to knock it out of the park. And another high point, 70.3, and do really well in that, that would be enough to qualify me. So my, I didn't want to be in the position where I have to do 2-3 Ironman races to qualify.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that
you show up shot.
Too. Yeah. I don't want to show up totally destroyed.
Yeah.
I don't have the years of long course base to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I have 0 years of long course base.
You have 6 months at the moment.
And of 70.3
base. It's going pretty well. Yeah.
It's a different beast.
How different is it going from Olympic to half versus the difference between half and full?
Totally different animal. I mean, I haven't done one, but from what I hear, the other day I was Googling, how do you train for an Ironman?
Come on.
Totally. Like,
I have a YouTube channel for you.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Well, it was more, how do you train as a pro for an Ironman? But I mean, most of the stuff is like totally overlaps. Then I went down this whole wormhole of how does Jan Frodeno train? And I'm like, oh, I can never do that.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought he said once that the volume became, what was it? The volume became less overall, but way higher on the bike.
So he trains a lot as an ITU athlete.
Oh.
Like he did a lot of hours. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So he's been doing like 30-hour training weeks for years.
Oh,
I'm
okay.
Like a low 20s person. I'm going to have to bump
night
that.
And day.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, I will have to bump up my long rides quite a bit. Runs, I don't think I've ever run in my life more than 15 miles. So that one is going to be a bit of a bear.
Because
at least I've ridden my bike 100 miles and, you know, it's a few more than that. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's purposeful miles. Lots and lots of purposeful miles,
yes,
too. Not like fitting it in. Oh, on the weekend, I got one long ride.
Exactly.
To do. No, you have a lot of long rides.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of grinding. A lot of grinding.
And golden retriever syndrome on top of that.
I know. I know. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
Do you have a YouTube channel for that? What's that?
I made a YouTube channel for my golden retriever syndrome. That's how I keep myself occupied every day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I've got to be respectful of your time. I pushed it a little bit. I know. Yeah.
Well, I'll give you one more question. And no pressure, but it better be really good.
Better be a really good one. Okay. People are going to listen to this after the race is over tomorrow.
Okay.
Let's hear a prediction for it. Let's hear a race plan tomorrow. And then you got to guess the time.
Oh.
And there's no pressure because you're not, like, nobody's going to listen to this before the race.
Here's the thing.
We just want to see how close you
Here's
get.
Here's the thing.
It's like Price is
so
Right.
So it's going to be really cold in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And we may not have a swim.
I think we're having a swim.
I don't know.
Water temperature, like, I'm from Canada. This is balmy. This is awesome.
I know, but they're kind of soft down here.
Sounds that way. Yeah.
They're not like us up north. Like, mm-hmm. You know, no big deal. It's 40 degrees.
Yeah. So let's say, assuming a swim, what's the race plan?
Go pretty hard on the swim. Go pretty hard on the bike. Don't forget to eat and drink. And build into the run.
So let's have... I want to put some...
You want me to do outcome goals? Come on.
Wow, we're going to do that at the end, yeah. Okay, so pretty hard on the swim means... Like, are you going basically one step below red line?
Oh, two steps.
Two steps?
Yeah,
okay.
Whatever that is.
Okay.
So
just
let's
like,
say...
You just kind of feel
so
it.
Like,
whatever the race tactics end up being.
Strong cruisy.
Strong cruisy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And the bike is... Let's have some power numbers.
Let's talk gears on the car.
Okay.
All day, I'll probably be in third gear.
Really?
Yeah.
Not on the run? On the run, like... Should
on
it be
the run,
overdrive
might,
in the last 11K?
No. I might move it up to fourth gear if I've done my nutrition right.
Okay.
But there's a good chance I'll just stay in third.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a really fast third gear.
Well, you also have to understand, I'm coming from ITU.
25 years of going fast, yeah.
How long have you think I've been doing ITU? Not that long.
You started swimming as a kid.
Yeah, that's true.
I did my homework.
So, a sprint distance race would be somewhere between fourth and fifth gear. Olympic distance race is fourth gear.
Yeah.
You know, so based on that, it's still... I mean, this is what people don't understand. These are ultra events compared to any other sport. So we think this is a middle distance race. That's insane. I'm racing for 4 hours and 15 to 20 minutes.
Committed
tomorrow.
To a time. There
yeah,
we go.
Between 4:15 and 4:20. We'll put it. I'm feeling that.
You're feeling that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Sub 4:20 tomorrow.
Unfortunately, Price is Right, there is no prize.
What?
Besides
you
a mass.
You tricked me.
I built it up a lot there.
You tricked me to an outcome goal.
Yeah.
Okay, so
I sure did.
All right.
Yeah. And you didn't even go to the default, I'm just focused on the process. I don't even think about a time.
I really don't. I am so new that I'm that sounds an acceptable time, but I don't actually.
Really?
Yeah. That sounds okay. It sounds pretty good.
It sounds good.
I think I'd be happy with 4:15.
That'd be a good time.
Right?
I think it's fantastic.
Okay.
Good luck on that.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very
coach.
Much. Hey, Trainiacs, I hope you dug that interview. Just a few things before you take off and get onto your next podcast. First off, if you want to get just the best Triathlon Terran stuff filtered for you every week, go to triathlonterran.com/thehits. Enter your email address, and every week, instead of having to sift through all the bad stuff to get to the good, we'll send you out a weekly email with our most popular YouTube video from the previous week, Instagram posts, spotting a podcast, or even some of the favorite gear that I'm trying out. Could be a book, could be some tech, whatever. If you enter your email address, we'll make it easy for you. Get to your best stuff every week by going to triathlonterran.com/thehits.
And next, if you want to support the show at all, you can go to triathlonterran.com and take your pick from a few things we've got there that you can work into your day-to-day training. We've got coaching plans if you are looking for one. We've got our awesome-looking Trainiac gear. And if you click through the Amazon banner ad or click on any of the products that we mention or link to and you purchase anything at one of the affiliate sites like Amazon, it doesn't cost you anything extra, but we get a small commission. And of course, everything adds up and helps us a lot to keep this thing going.
And finally, if you want to get a shout out personally for your family members, Tri Club, whatever you want, leave a rating for us over on iTunes, good, bad, whatever. And in the next podcast, we'll shout out everyone who in the previous week gave us an iTunes podcast rating. That really helps us get discovered there. And if you want to give a shout out to anyone specifically, share the podcast with someone and CC me in at Taren, Taren, at triathlonterran.com and send us the message that you want to send to your loved one, friend, family member, most hated nemesis out on the tri course, whatever it is.